Hi, I'm Sally Hughes, and this is the return of Beyond the Bathroom, where each week I find out how my guests feel about their own appearance and self-image. What kind of relationship do they have with their own face and body? How have time and experience changed the way they feel about the way they look? Today's guest is Alex Jones. Having made her TV debut while still at university as a contestant on none more 90s game show Prickly Heat, Alex became a TV researcher before establishing herself as a presenter on the BBC and on S4C, fronting shows in both Welsh and English. In 2010, she became a co-host of The One Show, on which she's now so well established, it feels like she's outlasted more co-hosts than the Queen had prime ministers. Among many other presenting gigs, Alex has also found time to compete on Strictly and do what is surely every presenter's dream 15-second gig, announcing the UK's points awards on Eurovision. So has being seen as the BBC's girl next door changed the way Alex sees herself? And has her mum's obsession with hair had a lasting effect? More of that later. Good afternoon and pranamdar, Alex Jones. But before that, a massive thank you to Clinique, who are sponsoring this series of Beyond the Bathroom. Clinique, where great-looking skin begins. I wanted to talk to you about your mum. We often start with mums because I do think they're so influential in how you kind of see yourself. And I know you're especially close to your mum. In fact, both of your parents.
Yeah.
The wholesome stuff involves lots of stuff about your mum and her obsession with grooming and wanting you to look a certain way. Before we talk about that, tell me what she looked like and what her attitude to self-care and her appearance was when you were little.
So mum, for my sister and I, has always been a little bit of a style icon.
Yeah.
She's amazing and she's still super immaculate. And you can tell sometimes she sees me leaving the house and she thinks, I can't believe she's going out looking like that. So as far back as I can remember, mum would always be sort of her blow dry, for example, right? So she had this immaculate bob and it was so precise. And she'd spend about an hour every day, so blow drying it within an inch of its life.
So like a really geometric,
yes,
could slice vegetables.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it did turn under at the bottom and she had a set of brushes. And God forbid that anybody would touch the brushes for the hair. And she would sit there with this sort of really weak hair dryer, you know, that was like blowing on her like... Pff,
they were rubbish, weren't they?
You know, rubbish, like a Babyliss or something,
yeah,
like that. And she would put so much effort, the clips would come out and she'd section it all off and then, you know, and it would take ages. I mean, how she didn't get a stiff neck from doing the back,
yeah,
I have no idea. But that was her level of detail. She's always been like this. She had a perm in the late 80s and she'd be like...
Of course she did.
Of course she did. And she'd be in like a powder pink jumpsuit with like high boots. She just always looked great. And Dad, as a result, also looks great because she's like, Alan, you can pull that off. I've put your clothes out on the bed. So she's just very, very fussy. And Mum would know when we'd been to the dentist by what outfit we had on at the time.
How do you mean?
So she'd go back through the wardrobe. She'd go, I think you and Jen, my sister, were wearing that. So that must have been, I bought it.
So oh, wow.
Yeah. This is Mum. It's all about appearance. And she will ring me now after the show and she'll say, yeah, the show was nice, but you didn't have enough blusher on. That's one of her favourite lines.
You need some cheek, love.
I know. And even as little girls, before we went to school, she'd hate us going looking pale. And I'm prone to looking pale anyway,
yes,
you know, Celtic skin. And she'd get the Marks and Spencer blusher palette out that had like eight different, you know, versions of pink. And she'd go, come here, girls. And after we'd brush our teeth, she'd put a little bit of blusher on us to go to school.
Aww.
And for school photos, clear mascara.
Clear mascara, that was all the rage, wasn't it, for a while? I mean, it did bugger all, but you felt
it did
very grown
nothing,
up. Yeah.
But it did a little bit of something,
yeah,
mentally.
Yes.
And it was always from the Body Shop.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Body Shop colourings, clear mascara, I remember
exactly
it well.
So Mum was very, you know, very specific about how she looked. Even when Dad fell off the roof of our house I must have been about 5 and my sister must have been about 3. And he'd really, really hurt himself. He'd broken both his knees.
Oh, wow.
And he'd also, his hands had been shredded by sort of this plastic guttering on the top of the house. And he'd crawl to the front door.
Oh, my goodness.
And there was snow everywhere. And it was the television aerial had come off and he'd gone up to fix it. And he'd crawl to the front door. Mary, Mary, I've hurt myself. She went, oh, God, what have you done now, Alan? And he said, well, I've just fallen off the ladder, this wooden ladder. And all the rungs had broken and he'd fallen right the way through. And she said, right, well, I'll just go and put some lipstick on and then go to the hospital. And up she went to the bathroom. I'll never forget it. And she popped some lipstick on and then she's one of those. And if she's got her lippy on, she feels she can face the day.
I mean, I understand that. She's going to hospital. She's going to have to deal with doctors. She's going to have to deal with nurses. She's going to have to fill out forms. She's going to have to put her best foot forward. And for lots of people, that's the armour, isn't it? That you need to go and deal with your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is with Mum. And she worked, when we were little, she was a cashier in a bank. And it was sort of very public facing. Mm-hmm. And she liked to feel that she was ready for the day. I think it's just part of her preparation. And I've often thought about Mum and thought, how is she so like that? Always so immaculate, always so groomed. And my sister and I, you know, we put a bit of makeup on, but I can also leave the house and go and watch the boys play rugby without a scrap of makeup on. It doesn't bother me. And I just thought for a long time, why is she like that? And I don't know whether it's because she lost her mum when she was very young and she became the mum of the house at a very young age. And it's all part of that.
Part of adulting.
Part of adulting. But she always looks fab and she puts us both to shame. We go out for, you know, lunch or something as a family and mum always looks amazing. My sister and I are like, oh, have you got any lip balm, Jen?
And I read you saying that she would do your hair for the week. And it would have to be perfect.
It would. So we were of that generation. You know, I don't know why, but we seem to bath our kids every day. Well, probably because they're really dirty, those boys. But we used to have a bath mainly and wash hair on a Sunday.
Yes.
So Sunday
everyone
was
did.
The big, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Antiques Roadshow would be on. That was depressing, the music, because it would signal time for hair wash.
Yeah.
So up you'd go. That was the weekend over. And, oh, she'd sit there and it would be the same blow-dry process. So section the hair and then a full blow-dry. And if there were school photos, oh, my goodness, the blow-dry would be. And, you know, she wasn't gentle. You know, there'd be a lot of pulling.
Yeah.
It wasn't relaxing. But the result she was pleased with, it would be bouncy and turn under.
Would she ever get the, for a school photo, the hot brush? Remember the mums had the hot brush?
She loved the hot brush. Brawn Independent, I think hers was.
Yes,
so with the gas
too.
Canisters that would go in and you could do it on the move.
Forget those plugs and cords, girls.
You know what I mean?
Need them no more. That was the slogan.
She was all over a Brawn Independent.
Yeah, my mum always had a Brawn Independent. Bits of it in her handbag and these kind of gas canisters.
Exactly.
So you've said to me before, I've interviewed you before and you said then, and I've seen this in other interviews you've done, that you had an almost kind of crippling shyness until really your kind of drama teacher encouraged you to kind of put yourself forward a bit. Before that turning point, did your shyness extend to wanting to look invisible? How did you feel about your appearance?
I was really, when I was little, I hated the way I looked. Really hated it. And for Mum's best efforts, lover, I still looked awful. I mean, I look back at school photos and I'm like, oh my God.
What did you hate?
Well, I had freckles for a start and I still cannot stand freckles.
But really?
Now, you see, I've learned to live with them. I'm like, now I'm just a lot more comfortable in my own skin.
I just think they're the prettiest thing in the world, freckles. Well, I don't have them.
My friends used to draw them on. And,
you
know, it's that thing, isn't it? If you've got straight hair, you want curly hair. If you
have
curly hair, you want straight hair. But you can't have it all. But I hated my freckles so much. When I was very young, I remember not really paying much attention to my appearance. I was like, Mum's got all that. Fine. But then I remember really clearly being 15. And I think that's when the obsession started, which I suppose in today's terms is quite old.
Yeah.
But I'd read in More magazine or something, or Just 17 or one of those magazines, that your lips would be at their plumpest at 15.
Oh,
well,
okay.
I was devastated. I thought, well, here we are. It's downhill from here. And they weren't particularly, you know, juicy or anything.
This
then.
Is the best it's going to get.
Do you know what I mean? But then sort of, I don't know, how many years later, 30 years later, whatever, I'm just like, oh, they're still all right. You know, it's funny, isn't it, how you obsess when you're that age. But, and I remember looking at my thighs and thinking, oh, I really want a gap at the top of them.
Oh, goodness.
You know, so even though I guess people go on, and I was skinny as you like back then, so skinny. I remember Mum, this is embarrassing now, making elastic bands to hold up my socks when I first went to senior school because my legs were so thin that they would just fall down. And she didn't want that. It had to be pristine. So, you know, I don't know what I was worried about, really. There was nothing of me. But I remember then I became aware of how I looked and I didn't like what I was looking at all.
As you say, I mean, it's depressing. 15 is quite late by today's standards, but I remember it being around about 15 because I'm older than you when people were starting to be aware of that stuff. And it's horrible how the kind of pollution gets under the crack of the door, really.
It really is, isn't it? And I was just thinking in the car on the way here, you know, when did I start? And I can clearly remember what I was wearing, thinking this thing about lips. And I thought, why was I so bothered, you know? But
yeah.
But of course, now you see videos of young girls at 6 years old and they're doing a full skincare routine. And that is even more depressing.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, on balance, 15, I guess, was okay. But looking back now, you know, in my late 40s, I just can't even believe I was even that obsessed about it. And I was so depressed because I just thought, oh, my God, I hate the way I look. I want blonde hair. I've got this dark hair. And, you know, my hair was sort of, still is, not today, but still is, you know, one of my sort of best assets.
Yes, you've got beautiful,
and, you know, I can do a lot
hair,
with it.
Right, yeah.
But at the time, I was like, I don't want this colour hair. I want blonde hair,
mm-hmm.
you know. I really wanted braces, even though I had sort of straight teeth and I'd bend bangles and pop them in my mouth, hoping that would solve the issue. It's really funny, isn't it? And quite depressing how hard we are on ourselves from such a young age. And I'm really aware of that with my daughter.
And how did that show up for you at a young age? Did you then think, I hate how I look, I need to fix it, I'm going to start experimenting with all this stuff? Or did it make you retreat?
I think as a young girl, it made me retreat. I mean, I was the shortest in our class, so small, so thin, so shy. I mean, I was practically invisible, really. And as you say, it took until I was about sort of 14, 15 to find really good friends and then starting to compare myself, I suppose, with those girls and thinking, oh, she's got boobs. I haven't got boobs. Why haven't I got boobs? You know, I don't think I had a period until I was about 15, mm-hmm. which is really late. But it all came whoosh all at once. And suddenly there was a growth spurt. There were boobs. There was, you know, there was periods. There was, and then I think even though for some people that's a really challenging time, I think it did me the world of good.
How so?
Because then I thought, oh, it's okay. Now, you know, I'm taller, I look more like a woman. It gave me a bit of confidence. And again, finding a really good set of friends that were girls and boys. And just, I think then my confidence started to come in a bit. Whereas I just, honestly, I mean, I was just so shy and so quiet. I think Mum and Dad were quite worried, you know, by how shy I was. And they say now it's probably our fault because we were in our young 20s. Having mm-hmm. you, and we were really hard on you, like our parents were on us, and we thought that was the way. Where, of course, we know so much more now, and we are sorry that we sort of, you know, shut you down so much. But we just wanted children that behaved, and you know, I was like, yes.
I mean, that is still important. I mean, presumably, it sounds like you always felt really loved. By
oh,
them.
Completely loved. But it was, you know, a case of, you know, the adults are speaking.
Yes.
You know, you can speak when you're spoken to, kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was, and Mum and Dad now say, what were we thinking? And my sister, though, she had the same upbringing, but funnily, wasn't like that at all. I mean, she was complete opposite.
Yeah.
You know, my kids call her the naughtiest kid in South Wales. That's the label they've given her.
So even though you developed a bit of confidence in how you look, nonetheless, when you entered the industry, you're obviously now known for, you were behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And there was a moment, wasn't there, where it was suggested to you that you might want to try out for a children's show.
Yeah.
Front of camera. What was your initial reaction to that, to be being seen, to be being on camera with everybody looking at you?
I think I was kind of okay with it by then because I think it was sort of GCSEs A-level time that I had this just brilliant teacher who had obviously spotted something and she knew what I really wanted to do, and I'd not really shared that with anybody else. And she said, I think you could do it, you know. And slowly, slowly, you know, I gained a lot more confidence. And by the time I was in uni, I was like a completely different person. Really good set of friends. I mean, good moral compass, because mum and dad had put the hard yards in. But, you know, I was a completely different person by then. I was like, right, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to work in telly. There you are. And I mean, we'd had the conversation about, what about doing history though? What about doing law? No. That ship had sailed. It was, you know, we were sort of committed by that point to doing drama. And I was completely different. I just thought I'd give anything a try by that point.
So you then enter an industry which arguably, I mean, it's a whole other world in terms of appearances. Everyone's looking at you. The camera picks up everything. I admit this is before HD, but even so, and there's professional lighting and professional makeup artists. And so what was that like entering that world? Because I think people maybe who've never worked in TV don't realise what a kind of sacred space that makeup room is, how much goes on there, how much conversation there is. Obviously, the intimacy of touching someone's face, it's a very close, yeah, intimate environment.
It is. And I have to say that the girls who make me up have been the same girls for the last 15 years. They are now my closest friends.
Yeah.
You know, they know me sometimes better than I know myself. They know when to chat. They know when to be quiet if there's something I'm a little bit nervous about. Makeup artists do so much more than just put makeup on, as you know.
Agree. Say more about that, though, because I don't think people know.
So the makeup room is, as you said, a very safe space. It's the place where you transform, essentially, from being just your normal, everyday self into the persona that people see on television. And that doesn't mean a complete transformation, but there is a gear shift, I think. And those girls who, well, I mean, obviously they work in right by your face anyway. You know, Liz, my sort of main makeup artist.
People who follow me will know Liz. Liz is a special person to lots of you, isn't she?
Oh, Liz is such a special person. I would trust her with my life. I met her by chance about 3 months into getting the job on the One Show. And on that particular occasion, I was doing Eurovision. You know, the scores where you say, you know, d'espoir or whatever. Best job ever. And I was thrilled. But it was a big night for many reasons. Firstly, because I was doing the Eurovision. And for all my friends in Cardiff, this was mega.
I mean, this would be the moment for me.
Do you know what I mean? Forget the One Show. They were like, Eurovision.
Especially if you get to say Nilpois.
Nilpois. Because every year up until that point, we'd had a tradition where we would go to my friend Hugh's house, we would have scorecards, we would dress up, all of it. And this was the first year that I wasn't there, but it was okay because I was doing the scores.
I think you can get away with it, yeah.
So they were thrilled.
Yeah.
But also that night, I was going on my second date with Charlie, who is now my husband.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
So after Eurovision, I was going to go to Clapham and meet him, and it was his birthday. And Eurovision always falls on his birthday because it's the 14th of May. So we went to Clapham, and that was it. That relationship from then on just got better and better, and we're now married. But Liz was there right at the beginning.
Wow.
She also did my makeup for our wedding as well.
Oh, how lovely.
But so Liz, so we met by chance and she was like, oh my God, you're doing Eurovision. I was like, I know, I can't believe it. This is amazing. She said, right, we're going to do something different. I was like, oh no, here we go. And in my mind, I thought, oh no, I hate a lip. So I had a real aversion to any lip colour.
Really?
Yeah. Again, I think it's part of me wanting to sort of blend. And you'll see today, no lip colour. That's just time more than anything else. But
I've seen you in a red lip and you looked absolutely banging.
Well, now I'll put a red lip on. But at the time I was like, no, absolutely not. That draws way too much attention. She was like, what are you talking about? You're on bloody BBC One. You're doing the Eurovision. What do you mean?
Also, Eurovision is not a time for good taste and subtlety, is it?
No.
I mean, it's not the occasion.
Look, you've got this sort of purple and orange dress on, which in itself sounds horrendous, but I promise you it wasn't. And she said, so I think we're going to do a lip, and a clashy lip will look so good with
it. Yes, she's right.
So I relented, and this has been how our relationship has been since then. So I relented, the lip went on, and she said, it looks amazing. And then I said, all right then, well, why don't you come and do the one show? And then she did, and 15 years later, I mean, she is still, I trust nobody more than her, really. You know, I've got best friends at home, Mum, my sister, but Liz is very, very close to the top of that.
Lauren Laverne would say the same thing.
Yeah.
She is beloved, isn't she?
She really is. And it's just, I think she is an incredible person. She's a talented makeup artist, no doubt about it. But also just the way that she sees life is quite extraordinary. And being in a company makes me feel calmer.
She's a calm and serene type
she
of person.
Is. So if
she?
I've got a job I'm nervous about, I said, Liz, you have to do this with me. Because there are other girls as well, which are brilliant as well. But Liz is, for me, my complete safety blanket. She tells me the truth, or she'll say, don't sit like that, pull your top down. You know, she just knows. It's like having Mum there.
Yeah.
Basically, she's incredible. So anyway, so Liz was there on that big night and she's been there ever since. But the makeup room is a safe space where it's where all your insecurities play out, I think, as a performer, whether you're a presenter or an actor. It's where you feel at your most vulnerable.
Yeah.
So as you take the makeup off, that's your day makeup, and you get ready for that transformation, all the nerves or anxieties about the job that's ahead come into play. You know, it's also nice when somebody knows, as I said, when you want to chat, when to be quiet. And a really good makeup artist just feels
takes
that.
The temperature in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And feels where you are that day. They build your confidence, of course, and really exceptional ones like Liz and the other girls. They not only build confidence, but they also, they just know in that final minute before you're out on stage or on set, she'll just always say the right thing. She'll go, Jones, at the end of the day, nobody's going to die. Come on, go. You know, or she'll go, come on, deep breath, off you go. And she'll give me a little push in the back. And that makeup room is so important, I think.
Yeah.
And people often underestimate the work they do.
Liz Beckett's details will be in the show notes. You should go and follow her. She's just a lovely, she's a lovely thing, isn't she?
Yeah,
she's a lovely person, a very talented artist. And yeah, a thoroughly good egg. You should go and follow her. So you'll find her details in the show notes. Thank you to our wonderful Beyond the Bathroom series sponsor, Clinique. At Clinique, you'll find dermatologist-guided solutions for your skin type and your skin goal. From the original Clinique computer to today's innovative clinical reality diagnostic tool, Clinique has always helped you to understand your skin and its specific concerns. Clinique's consultants are educated in partnership with dermatologists and are always on hand, either online or in selected stores. I've met and worked with dozens of these consultants by this point, and they are second to none in terms of their knowledge and passion for skin. Clinique skincare and makeup products are dermatologist tested, allergy tested, and 100% fragrance free. Thanks again to Clinique, where great looking skin begins. what about though when you leave that environment? Are you a, you know, a makeup wipe in the taxi home, hair scraped back, I'm back to civvies kind of person or not?
I won't instantly take my makeup off. I like having makeup put on. I mean, who doesn't? I still think it's a huge treat. And, you know, naturally, I suppose you pick up tips from having your makeup done over the years. Not that you'd think it to look at me. But if I had to do my own makeup, I suppose I could pull it together by now.
Would you be better now for having been on the telly for as many years?
I can't even tell you. But I always wanted to be a makeup artist.
Did you?
Yeah, if it wasn't working in front of camera, I would have really liked to be a makeup artist. I was always interested from a young girl in different products. And I remember, you know, having a plain roll, an apple at lunch instead of eating a tidy lunch, so that I could go to Boots and buy, you know, more...
With the saved money.
Yeah, more Rimmel and number 17.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a few bath bombs from Body Shop or wherever it was. But I loved products. And I suppose that, again, is mum's influence, you know. Even I remember as a five-year-old going into her makeup bag and, you know, and then you'd accidentally smash an eyeshadow or something. And you'd think, oh, and it'd be all over the bathroom.
The dust would be everywhere.
You know? And so I loved it. And mum kind of encouraged that. She loves makeup and skincare. And, you know, in our stocking every year, she'd buy us the most lovely sort of little sets, you know, that would really excite you, I think, a young girl.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So Annie will now do it to me. She'll get my makeup back. She'll like, Mama, makeup for me. And I'll give her a little bit of moisturiser. And I'll say, right, you rub that on your cheeks, you know. And when Liz sometimes comes to the house to do my makeup, you know, Annie will sit there and she's enthralled by the whole thing. And I think that's okay. Where the line is between that and young girls of six doing full skincare routines, I'm not quite sure. I haven't worked it out yet. But I think there is such a thing as a healthy interest in the art of it.
Yes, and the play.
And the
playfulness of it.
You know?
I suppose, I mean, God, look, I don't know what the difference is either. And I don't have daughters, I have sons. But as somebody who was a little girl in a house full of men, I have lots of brothers and I was raised by my dad. I suppose the reason I always loved it and found it playful is nobody ever led me to believe I needed it to look prettier. It was just a thing that was fun and experimental and transformative and playful and all of those things. I never really got the message that it was there to make me better than I was, which I think was good.
And maybe that is the difference between makeup and skincare.
Uh-huh.
Because skincare is very much, well, if you put this on your skin, you're going to look amazing. Whereas makeup, it's more experimental, a little bit more playful.
Creative.
Creative. I mean, I remember, you know, that nail varnish that you could then peel off.
Yeah.
I used to love things like that.
Yeah, Woolworths used to sell it. Remember?
Exactly.
Tinkerbell.
Yeah. Tinkerbell, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, then later on, the Body Shop bronzing balls.
Yes.
Which would just be hell on a cream carpet.
Yes.
You know, you'd sit on
one. You always
on
dropped one and stood on it.
Always.
Yeah.
You know, but I think there's a lot of fun to be had as well. And Annie already just absolutely loves that. So back in my early 20s, you know, sort of late teens, early 20s, I loved experimenting with makeup. But then it was such a treat to go into telly and be done by people whose job it was and to learn how to properly put it on.
I love hearing you say that because I think a lot of the time, sort of famous women, understandably, start talking about getting their makeup done as a bit of a drag, you know, oh, I've got to get in earlier than the men, I've got to get this done, oh, I can't wait to get it off at the end of the night. So it's actually really lovely to hear a woman go, what a treat, you know, to have professionals make you up.
You know, maybe you've lost the sense of fun in life. If you can't see that having your makeup done daily is one of my favourite parts of the day.
I love that.
I mean, it's fun. It's, of course, it's relaxing. You're with your girlfriends in the room. We have a right nice time. And I think sometimes, you know, people feel like they need to say, oh, well, you know, it shouldn't be about the makeup. It's not about the makeup,
no.
But it's just a nice part of the day.
Yeah.
And when I first got the job on the One Show, I was so busy thinking about what that meant and the pressure that it came with. I honestly didn't think about what I looked like. I mean, I just didn't have the time to consider that. But I was really glad that they had brilliant people in place who were taking care of that part of it. So I think it plays a big part, not in appearance, but in the way it prepares you for the job you're about to do.
I wonder what the brief was. I was thinking about you yesterday, obviously, while I was researching this. And I was thinking, what's the kind of brief? Because I know you won't be offended by this because we've talked about this before, but your image, it sounds too calculated to say brand because you are the same in real life, but your kind of image is of this, you know, you're everyone's mate. You're a girl's girl. You're a kind of girl next door. You can imagine knowing you, which is part of that show, really, isn't
yeah.
it? The One Show is this kind of slightly eccentric family wedding, if you like, where all these sort of random people.
I love that analogy.
It's like all these kind of random people who would never normally be together on this sofa, and you're kind of keeping the plates spinning in the middle. And it's important that you are the kind of the friendly, cozy person at the centre of it. And so when it comes to your appearance, is that deliberately warm, soft, twinkly, friendly?
I don't know, really. But I think, you know, if you look at it from a perspective of, okay, here you are, you're in a makeup chair, what do you want? I would always want to look fresher. That is just, I think, what suits me more.
And you've got two small children, so you probably feel like you need it. On
yeah,
the day-to-day
do you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, the thing that worries me about my appearance now is looking sort of a bit dull, a little bit tired, just because we're all on the go so much.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lack of sleep, as you say, young children. So if there's an opportunity for somebody to make me look, oh, well, we can pile it on, or I can make you look fresh. I think as well, a lot of, you know, Liz's influence is that she likes doing fresher
yes.
makeup, you know? It's not thought through in terms of what should I look like on the show. I think that's just a decision I would make anyway. You know, it's nice though sometimes when she goes, oh, should we do a little blue flick or something? You know,
something a bit vampy.
A little bit more of an edge. And of course, if you do evening stuff that's, you know, more of a hosting job at night, you can go a little bit more. I think you always have to think about where you're, you know, what is the job in front of you? And on the One Show, it is 7 o'clock. It's a family show. You don't want to look over the top. I mean, I think it would look mad. I think sort of the makeup suits the show. But also sometimes, and I mean, I can only say this to a lady who really knows about these things. Sometimes because the lighting, you can't see the lovely makeup.
Yeah. It's so strong, isn't it?
It's so
that
strong.
That kind of shiny floor yes. lighting. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot.
You know, sometimes the girls have just done a beautiful job and you think, oh, but if only the people at home could see my eyes, and they might not be interested, but it's nice to know that they could see it if they wanted to. But
yes.
Sadly, sometimes not because the lights bleach everything.
Yes. Apparently on LWT years ago, they used to call it the Cilla light. If something wasn't quite right on your face, like you'd come out in a rash or something, they would wheel out the Cilla light that was like so like yeah. big tungsten job.
The 80s just, ring light.
Yeah, yeah, like Bananarama video light. You mentioned there your daughter, and I just wanted to talk to you about becoming a mum. I know you're a few years down the road, but becoming a mother, as lots of people listening will know, is a time where, as a woman, you can feel a little bit disconnected from your body, or at least you change your relationship with your body and your appearance. Time is short. You've been through this huge physical upheaval. What did that look like for you, if at all?
Well, I loved being pregnant, first yeah. of all, three times. I just absolutely loved the experience. And I was lucky that I didn't feel ill. I felt super healthy. And, you know, your skin glows, your hair's good. and you feel great. But on the flip side of that, I remember the first day of being at home after having Teddy and attempting to
get
in the
shower. And
Teddy
was your first,
yeah,
wasn't he?
So he's now eight. And I just remember being in the shower and I was in bits because I just couldn't believe the car crash that I was left with. I thought, what the hell has happened here?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, nothing can prepare you, I don't think, can it, for that first time when you've had a child. I mean, and obviously it's that, and it is. I mean, my birthdays of the children are still my favourite days ever. But that day after, when everything's engorged, everything's painful,
yeah,
and you're just looking at your tummy and you're thinking, is this it?
Yeah.
Is this what life is now going to look like? And that was a really big shock.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think, and of course, we're not speaking for all women, but and lots of women's experiences are completely different from this. But I agree with you. My experience of being pregnant, I felt very body confident when I was pregnant.
Same.
Because there was something about having this huge bump that's meant to be there. I didn't care that my stomach stood out a mile because I was pregnant. But when the baby comes out and it's still there but deflated, you're like, well, shit, what am I going to do?
Yeah. And, you know, your milk is coming in and your boobs are engorged and everything hurts. And I thought, my God, nobody mentioned this bit, did they? You're kind of, you think it might be different, but the train crash is not what you were expecting. I mean, it's quite extreme, isn't it? And then, of course, you get through that. But now, on the other side of it, being a mum to three, my main concern always is health. Because I want to be around for those children for as long as possible. I love being a mother more than anything else. And of course, it has its ups and downs, as we all know. But oh, I enjoy it so much and I just want to be around. Mum and Dad have been my guiding lights, still are. And I can't imagine a world without them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to give the children, especially having had them much later, I want to give them us as parents for as long as possible. So health is the key thing on my mind.
So how does that manifest? How do you take care of that?
So I'm just quite careful about what I eat in terms of not a diet, but just balanced. I try and drink as much water as possible. Alcohol has had to take a back seat. I mean, I still drink. But, you know, I was really good at drinking in my sort of early 30s.
I was as well. Late 20s, you know.
Oh, it was like I was a thing of legend. And, you know, amongst our circle of friends, they were like, I'll never get a hangover. And so because I didn't get a hangover, I just thought, great, carry on. But now, obviously, we know more, don't we? And so I, you know, I'm quite sort of moderate when it comes to drinking. Try and sleep as much as I can. And I try and get out. I mean, for me, nature is kind of the saviour.
So you're one of those people. You're not a gym bunny.
I am not a gym bunny.
No.
Gym makes me feel ill.
Yeah, same.
I just don't like the feeling of being trapped in a room with lots of other bodies.
Yeah.
Sweating. I don't like the feeling at all. I'll do it, but I much prefer to be out in nature, walking or running, taking our dog for a walk or out with the kids. I just think that for me, mentally, that gives me a lot more. So it's kind of two birds, one stone. Physically and mentally, that does the job for me. Whereas going to the gym doesn't do it for me mentally at all. So health is my main concern. And then appearance, I suppose, has had to take a bit of a back seat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just haven't got time, have you?
But the time one often follows the other, right? If you're looking after yourself, you look better, typically.
I suppose. I mean, you know, things like facials and massages and all those things that aren't necessary, I've just had to take a back seat. You know, I think I've been into a spa once in the last 3 years, which I suppose lots of people listen to this maybe, you know, kind of think that people who do the kind of job that we do, you know, keep up with facials and all the rest of it. But
absolutely not.
I just don't.
I get asked this a lot. People assume I'm always having treatments, but, and I could, you know, I'm invited to, I could go for one every day if I wanted, but who's got the time? Who's got that life?
Yeah, and for me, you know, if it's, I don't know, I think by living well or as well as you can do and putting all the good stuff in, I hope that that will be enough, you know, and then you don't kind of need, I mean, I'd love to go for a facial once a week. I would love to.
Yeah.
But if it's that or you've got 2 hours with the kids, I know which I'm going to choose as a busy working mum. You know, that's where I am at this stage of life. And I'm sort of...
Also, this bit does go quite quickly.
Yeah. And I've accepted that. Yeah. You know, for me, it's easy decisions. I'm in work or I'm with them.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then in a while, they won't want to hang out with us all the time. And then maybe I will have a facial once a month.
I mean, you
Who
don't
knows?
See them for dust when they're teenagers.
Do you know
they're
what I mean?
With their friends all the time.
And I'm already quite worried about that stage. So for now, I just want to absorb them. So I try and eat well, all the, you know, all the stuff. And obviously, I fall off the wagon sometimes. A Sunday doesn't always look like that, you know, and we'll, you know, eat whatever. But it's just balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think if you put the right stuff in, you look all right.
I read somewhere or I heard somewhere you saying you love a bit of gua sha though.
Well, I'm one of these. I'm a sucker for things that pop up on Instagram.
Do you jump on things and then jump off or you have you stuck
well,
with it?
I've stuck with a gua sha, right? So when I ordered it, because that's one of the things I don't like, right? So cellulite didn't used to be a big part of my life and now I feel it's becoming a bigger part and I'm not enjoying it. I mean, I'm rarely in a bathing costume.
That's
if,
the thing.
If I'm going to be, let's get the gouache out.
And a man's not going to notice anyway.
Oh.
I don't think my husband would know if I put on 4 dress sizes. I don't think he would be able to tell.
No, no.
It took 3 weeks of me having pink hair to say, I've got pink hair.
And did he love it?
Well, we'd been home for 3 weeks. It was over Christmas.
That's
and
amazing.
After 3 weeks, I said, I've still got pink hair that I had 3 weeks ago. I was like, oh, I thought something was different.
Amazing. So got the gua sha, and I have to say, I thought, right, I'm going to give this a proper go. And I committed to, you know, you put moisturiser on after the shower, and now I'll do a little bit of a gua sha with some body oil. I have to say, it has made a bit of a difference.
Has it?
I think it has. Do you think it's in my head, or do you think it's possible?
Do you know, I think anything's possible. And I think also... lots of people who do that are also getting something else out of it, which is a bit of a moment for yourself, isn't it? It's a little bit of a connection between you and your body. It's an act of self-care that is psychologically beneficial.
Although I do dread that point when I get out of the shower.
Because
well,
you can't be asked.
No, I can't. I can't be asked. And I don't see it as a treat, but I'll give it a bash because I think I haven't got time to go and have a treatment. I'll just do this.
Yeah.
You know, so that's my kind of, at the minute, that's where I am, is do things that take the least amount of time for maximum results, hopefully. But, you know, I mean, I'm not, it's a funny thing because even though I sit every night on the television, I'm not that bothered. You know, I'd rather be healthy.
Yeah.
And I'll do what I can in the time that I've got.
Yeah.
But I'm realistic about
okay,
it.
Okay, so I'm giving you 60 seconds.
Okay.
To do something. And you know, I get that you're quite happy to nip out for a paper having just cleaned your teeth and nothing else. That's fine. But I am giving you 60 seconds and I'm telling you to do a thing. What are you going to do?
Okay, 2 things always. Mascara and blusher.
So I'm with you on the blush. I've got to have a cheek on or else I feel dead.
So some people, and I don't know who these people are or how they can live in this world, but they say blusher is not for me.
Loads of people don't wear any blusher. What's going on?
Sally, I mean, it's such a tool, isn't it?
Oh.
To perk you up immediately.
Instant. It's like the look of good health.
Yeah, I mean, I can go a bit Aunt Sally.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
same.
I can go a little bit extreme.
I'd rather do that than none, though.
Right, same.
Yeah.
So if I had 60 seconds, I would... really good moisturiser and then mascara and a cheek on and probably some lip balm.
Yeah.
And then I'd be quite happy with that. I'd be like, right.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah. You'd look great with that. So is that what you've done today? You look very pretty today.
I haven't done a lot more than that.
You've got mascara and cheek on, I can see.
I have. I have.
So tell me, after all these years and having done the career that you've done, which is still thriving, obviously, and having been so shy when you were young and gone on this journey with yourself, what do you now see when you look in the mirror?
I mostly like what I see in the mirror because I'm comfortable in my own skin. I've never thought of myself as being pretty or beautiful or any of those words that occasionally people say, and I'm still like, are you sure? And that's not me being self-deprecating. That's just me saying honestly what I see. But what I do see is somebody who's comfortable. I know I've got good friends. I've got children I adore. I've got a job I really love. And a husband who is just a superstar as well and is just a lot of fun. And I think, okay, I take care of myself. And what I see is just a person who now knows who she is. And I didn't used to be that person. I used to think, oh God, I hate the way I look. I'm never going to be on telly. And I've overcome all of that. So I'm quite happy with what I see. Some days better than others. You know, if I haven't had a good night's sleep, I can think, oh God. But on the whole, I think beauty is so much deeper than just what you see on the surface. You know, and I know that I can nip in and then in the afternoon the girls will do the best they can and I look better than what I'm looking at first thing in the morning. But I am still quite happy with that person. And, you know, in TV, gosh, lots of the people that I admire and have admired since I was a young, young presenter and now in their sort of 50s, you know, people like Davina and Claudia and Tess, and they still look incredible.
Absolutely.
And they're still at the top of their game.
Absolutely.
So for that reason, I think we can all relax a little bit. You know, careers don't have to end in your mid-40s anymore. You know, women are on TV now into their 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
Look at Angela Rippon.
Yeah.
Look at Dame Mary Berry. You know, they still thrive in, still look amazing. But it's not always about just what, how your face looks. There's so much more, and being comfortable and confident in yourself, I think that's beautiful.
It absolutely is, and so are you, both superficially and beneath.
Oh, so. Gosh.
Thank you so much for coming on. I love talking to you. You are just such a kind of positive, positive person. It's always really cheering to hear you talk. Thanks for coming on. If you enjoyed today's conversation with lovely Alex, there are loads more in the archive. You can either subscribe or you can trawl through the archive, and please do leave your comments and your ratings. They help a lot. Until next time, lots of love. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
Beyond the Bathroom is written and hosted by me, Sally Hughes, and is an Insanity Studios production. The head of production is Charlotte Mason, the head of digital is Ed Buckley, and the production assistant is Abby Sandler.